Good evening and welcome to the third episode of our Drawing Your Path to Success video series. I'm Darren Vaughn, the Communications Director for the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish, and tonight we have Caitlin Rule, the Bighorn Sheep Biologist. We're going to be talking all things Bighorn Sheep this evening, so got a lot to look forward to. Coming up, this is, as I said, the third video in this series. We'll have more videos coming each Friday at 5 o'clock p.m. through March 17th. Which is the last Friday before the draw deadline. We will be releasing these on our YouTube page as well as on Facebook and Instagram. So keep an eye out for that. Also, as a reminder, the deadline for draw applications for Barbary, Bighorn Sheep, Deer, Elk, Ibex, Javelina, Pronghorn, Oryx, and the private land only deer licenses is March 22nd at 5 o'clock. Also, March 22nd is the deadline for your late harvest reports. There is an $8 late fee associated with that, but if you don't get those harvest reports in by the 22nd, all of your draw applications will be rejected. So make sure you get those in. So what are the big changes this year for Bighorn Sheep, or are there any big changes going into 2023-2024?
Yeah, we have a few changes that resulted from the most recent rule cycle. And for the 23-24 license year, we're going to see four new hunt areas added under the Desert Bighorn Ram Hunting Code. This includes a split of two of our month-long hunts into 2 2-week windows in both the Palencios and the Drones, as well as a split in GMU 26. We've divided that into the Big Hatchet and Little Hatchet hunts, and those hunts are also going to be bumped forward 2 weeks. On the Rocky Mountain Bighorn Ram side of the equation, we added a hunt in November. And we did this to capture that rut period and provide an opportunity to hunt rams during that. Another change in the Rio Grande Gorge is we've actually eliminated the ewe hunt in there for this upcoming license year.
So as far as the population here in New Mexico, how are the Rocky Mountain populations looking so far?
So our statewide estimate for Rocky Mountain Bighorn is around 1,600. It's pretty stable for the most part. We see some fluctuations in different populations. And the Rocky Mountain Bighorn herds are spread primarily in northern New Mexico and the central part of the state following the Rocky Mountain chain. We do have a population in the northeast corner of the state, in the Dry Cimarron, as well as in the Gila, San Francisco River and Turkey Creek areas.
And how about the deserts? How are they looking?
They're doing pretty well too. Stable to maybe slightly decreasing in recent years. We have 7 desert bighorn populations, and their total numbers are around 1,200 or so statewide. Again, individual populations fluctuating here and there. But yeah, I guess I'd like to highlight that there's not too many of them. I mean, bighorn sheep are a specialist animal, and so they're really restricted by habitat and like that rugged terrain, either in mountains or really big steep canyons. So in terms of, in the context of other big game species, there's a lot fewer bighorn sheep, and that's why we have fewer hunting opportunities.
So how can you tell bighorn sheep and Barbary sheep apart? I know that that's a question that we get fairly often. That way, you know, you're not looking for one and accidentally run into the other.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's an important thing to talk about. Especially since we do have one unit that gets a lot of Barbary sheep hunters where there are bighorn sheep, and that's GMU 34. So both species and both sexes and both species have horns, but I think there are some notable differences. For one, Barbary are more of a auburn or reddish brown, whereas the bighorn sheep is more of a grayish brown color. Bighorn sheep are going to have basically all white on their hindquarters. So if you're looking at them straight from the back, it almost looks like they're wearing white pants. Whereas Barbary are pretty much just reddish brown through across their whole bodies. And Barbary also have really shaggy hair on their fronts, both males and females do. I think one other difference is that Barbary sheep have longer tails.
And then between the two species of bighorn, what are some of the differences? At least, you know, obviously the habitat, but like some of the physical differences that you would notice.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I didn't think I touched on where we find our desert bighorn. You mentioned the habitat, but They're in the southern, mainly southwestern part of the state. And honestly, even as a bighorn sheep biologist, I think if you gave me just an image of a desert and just an image of a Rocky Mountain bighorn, they might be a little tricky to tell apart. Having that habitat in context helps. Mm-hmm. But there are some differences for sure. The Rocky Mountain bighorn are stockier. They're going to weigh more, especially the mature rams are going to weigh more. Desert bighorn have much sleeker coats. Mm-hmm. And so when Rocky Mountain bighorn get to winter, their coat gets super thick. And I wouldn't say, they certainly don't look sleek in the winter, whereas desert sheep are going to look sleek mm-hmm. all year round. And then lastly, the ewes from the two subspecies have slightly different horn lengths, and that is the desert bighorn ewes have longer horns. And even the youngest class rams have longer horns compared to their Rocky Mountain counterparts. And that's thought to be an adaptation for helping shed heat in the desert.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. And what are some of the factors that can affect bighorn populations?
Boy, there's probably countless ecological factors, really. I think in looking across the West and in New Mexico, the primary ones are going to be disease, mm-hmm. predation. The density levels that populations are at can impact their overall health and growth rates. And then drought, which is also important across the West.
So what is the typical hunter success rate for bighorn? What kind of feedback do you hear from hunters who have gotten the opportunity to hunt for these?
I would say the feedback is overwhelmingly positive on both the ram hunts and the ewe hunts. There's certainly some extra joy that comes from hunters that had the opportunity to harvest a ram. The success rates are pretty good on the ewe hunts for the most part, although we have seen years where they've dropped a little bit lower, but I think, you know, you can generally expect somewhere in the 60% success range. The ram hunts are about 95 to 100% harvest success. So
oh, wow.
It's, I wouldn't say it's a guarantee if you draw a tag, but really good odds.
Yeah, probably a lot better than just about any other species.
It might be, yeah.
So, if you're lucky enough to draw one of these hunts, what are some strategies that you might use to, you know, maybe not guarantee success, but boost your chances?
So you probably would do this with any hunt, but I think because it's a once-in-a-lifetime tag, you really want to do your homework and do some research on the area you've drawn in, both on the ground and by reaching out to me or other biologists with the department, area biologists, area officers, basically asking a lot of questions and fielding whatever knowledge you can from folks to help you be successful. But you also need to get on the ground and get to learn the habitat to a degree. That way, once the hunt starts, you're ready with a plan. So I think getting your body a little bit accustomed to being in sheep terrain and having a sense for where you might be able to find them. And probably something that goes along with that in terms of preparation is making sure you have at least basic gear. Mm-hmm. But if possible, you know, I think something like a bighorn sheep hunt, you really need good optics. And even if you've got to borrow some from a buddy, it's worth having a scope, good binoculars, good hiking boots. If you're on those alpine bighorn sheep hunts, you need clothing that can withstand all sorts of temperature swings and weather conditions. Mm-hmm. We've had people get snowed on up there. So having the right gear according to where you're going to be, and of course lots of food and water, because bighorn sheep hunting is hard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just because you have that high success rate doesn't mean that it's not like they just fell in your lap. You definitely have had
Absolutely.
To work for it.
Absolutely, yep. Mm-hmm. And I would say most folks are done hunting after a couple of days. But those are probably really hard days, mm-hmm. and we also have hunters every year that go more like 1 or 2 weeks, and so, I think you can expect some challenges for sure.
Mm-hmm. So as far as the odds of actually drawing one of these tags, what kind of odds are you looking at, and also, You know, as you apply for these tags, what are some strategies that, you know, you that again, that don't guarantee that you're going to draw, but will at least significantly increase your odds?
Sure. I think it's important to kind of put it into perspective a little bit. So I was looking at the numbers from last year, and I think we, in our elk draw, we gave out about 22,000 elk licenses. Mm-hmm. And compare that to bighorn sheep, and we had 50 ram licenses. So
oh, wow.
What that results in is probably a less than 0.5% chance as a resident that you're going to draw a ram tag.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's a few different approaches you can take in putting in for the draw. If you want to have the best odds possible, I think the best thing to do is not avoid putting in for the most subscribed areas. Mm-hmm. So the areas that get the most applicants for Rocky Mountain Bighorn are Wheeler Peak, the Rio Grande Gorge, the San Francisco River Turkey Creek area, and Latier.
Mm-hmm.
So not including any of those in your three choices may give you slightly better odds. On the desert side of the equation, the most popular areas people put in for are the Ladrones, the Hatchets, and the Missile Range.
Mm-hmm.
So avoiding those. The second hunt windows in different GMUs tend to have less applicants than the first, mm-hmm. right? So we have two hunt windows in a lot of hunt areas, and so that second one, especially on the Rocky Mountain Bighorn side of the equation, I think because people are also considering, you know, potentially worse weather mm-hmm. in the alpine and later hunts. So those second hunt windows get less applicants too. On the other hand, it is a once-in-a-lifetime hunt, and it's really difficult to draw no matter how you shake it. So another strategy is simply deciding how you can best maximize your hunt experience. So if you were to ask me 8 years ago, I would have said, oh, I'm only going to put in for alpine hunts for mm-hmm. Rocky Mountain Bighorn because I'd really like to be in that habitat when I get the chance to hunt and harvest a bighorn sheep. But today I have two little kids and, you know, have some other considerations in terms of how much time I can spend away, but also just the logistics of going out on hunts. And so actually now I'm more likely to put in for some areas where I think that I'd be able to spend more time scouting and potentially bring my kids along, like the Rio Grande Gorge mm-hmm. is a more accessible area in terms of road access and proximity to where I live. So I think identifying, you know, what things are going to make that hunt the best possible hunt for you and just sticking with that, since no matter what you do, it's going to be hard to draw.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can kind of combine the two strategies and maybe do your pie in the sky hunt areas for your first one or two choices, and then maybe the less subscribed unit or less subscribed areas for your third hunt choice.
So also in looking through the rules and information booklet, there are some enhancement tags available, both through auction and raffle. How can people apply for those, and you know, who do they need to get in touch with? How does this all work?
Sure. So our auction tags get auctioned off at the Wild Sheep Convention every year, and we actually just had that a couple weeks back and auctioned a desert ram tag and a Rocky Mountain Bighorn ram tag. So it occurs every year in January, so that's the venue where somebody can bid on an auction tag. The raffle tags are yet to be doled out for this upcoming license season, and the raffle occurs on June 30th every year. There's no limit to the number of raffle tickets that you buy, and it's kind of worth doing because it just gives you another shot at it. I don't think the odds are any better or worse than
mm-hmm.
than the state draw, but it gives you another opportunity. And it's probably worth mentioning that both the auction and the raffle licenses are transferable. They're authorizations, and so if you were lucky enough to win one, you could potentially hunt it or sell it. And the raffle tags are conveyed through the New Mexico Wild Sheep Foundation. So if somebody's interested in buying some raffle tickets, you would reach out to Brian Bartlett with the New Mexico Wild Sheep Foundation. And I believe his information is available in our RIB.
Okay.
If not, we can get that out to folks.
So another question that has come up about some of the survey work that the department does, going out and kind of analyzing what the populations are looking like. How many people are typically involved in that, and what are some of the methods that the department uses in those surveys?
Sure, that's a great question. I hear from people pretty often who are interested in pitching in and helping out. So we do surveys via air and ground. Most of our desert bighorn surveys are done from the helicopter. In those cases, it's just two observers in the helicopter. It's usually two biologists or a biologist and an area officer. But we also do some ground surveys and have occasionally enlisted help from volunteers for those. You know, I'd say our smallest scale ground surveys are a handful of people, to upwards of 15 to 20 people sometimes. And whether it's from the ground or the air, usually we're aiming to get as good of a count as we can so that we have a solid minimum number to base decisions off of. And we also try to get really good classification data. And so that's the breakdown of the various sexes and ages of animals. And looking at the ratios of lambs to ewes, it can provide some insight into how that population is doing, especially when you look at it in from a multi-year perspective.
Mm-hmm. Another question that's come up is regarding the overall health of the bighorn population. What are some of the things that the department does to kind of help ensure that that population is healthy? And what are some of the issues that you see kind of pop up?
Sure. I think it's important to kind of approach that with the right scale, because of course there's going to be challenges. You know, we're faced with things like drought and disease, and we can't control everything. And so, you know, we may have some intermittent issues that we need to overcome. And so it's really hard to, I just hesitate to say the word ensure their health. But we can take steps to promote healthy, sustainable bighorn populations in the long term. And one way we do this is by actively monitoring a lot of our bighorn sheep. Right now we probably have just shy of 100 radio collars on animals throughout the state. And capturing and radio collaring animals, for one, gives us an opportunity to handle those animals and take measurements and collect samples to analyze potential pathogen exposures. But putting a GPS collar on the animal then provides us with a sample in that population from which we can basically track how long that animal survives, a survival rate from a year-to-year basis. We can understand causes related to mortality. And using all that information, then take some steps depending on what management objective we might have.
Well, is there anything else that you'd like to add, or any words of wisdom for all those bighorn sheep hunters out there?
Well, I guess I'd say if you're lucky enough to draw, don't hesitate to reach out and ask whatever questions you need to. We enjoy talking to hunters, especially people that are really passionate about getting out there. And even if you don't draw a bighorn sheep tag, we have some pretty cool opportunities to get out and see them across the state. So so reach out to us and ask us where it might be best to do that.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time tonight, Caitlin. And best of luck to all of you looking to draw this year. Again, another reminder that the deadline for most of our big game species, except for bear and turkey, is March 22nd at 5 o'clock. Make sure that you get your applications in by 5 o'clock, because if you're still in the middle of your application and 5 o'clock hits, you will get kicked out of the system and your application will not go through. Also, harvest reports are due that day. Make sure that you have all your harvest reports in by March 22nd, or all of your, if you don't have those in, your dry applications will be rejected. Join us again next Friday, February 24th, 5 o'clock. We'll be with Travis Saffirano, our elk program manager. That should be an exciting session as well. So keep an eye out for that. And to watch this or any other episodes in this series, go to the department's YouTube page. And if you click on the Drawing Your Path to Success playlist, all of the videos should be there. So for Caitlin Rule and for our men behind the camera, Liam Phillips and Ryan Darr, I'm Darren Vaughn. We'll see you next week, and best of luck to all of you in the draw.